All right, good evening. Tuesday night Bible study on the book of Acts. We're going to do chapter 24 today. These last chapters are all right around 25 to 30 verses, so we can do them in one night comfortably, one class comfortably, so I don't have to split them in half like I otherwise do. So if you remember, in the previous chapter 23, the Jews had made false accusations about Paul in the temple. He tried to calm them down, standing outside the barracks. That didn't work. They took him into the barracks. They were going to interrogate him. He said, but I'm a Roman citizen. Oh, okay, well, put a hold on that. And then they called the tribune. We end up finding his name last week in chapter 23. It's Lysias. He called the Jewish council together, and they started having a discussion and to determine what's going on. Pardon me. And Paul throws a monkey wrench in the whole business, doesn't he? He says, I'm a Pharisee, and I'm under this persecution because of the resurrection. Well, that's true. A certain resurrection was what he was preaching. But, of course, that split the council, Pharisees and Sadducees. They started arguing, so then Lysias takes Paul back into custody. And word comes to Paul through his nephew. Remember that? That was kind of interesting. A word comes to Paul from his nephew, who then Paul sends his nephew to Lysias the tribune to say there's a plot to assassinate Paul. So the tribune forms a, can you call it a posse? It's not really a posse. I don't know. A regiment? I don't know. He puts together a regiment of soldiers and horsemen, and they escort Paul out, and he goes to see the governor, who's stationed out at Caesarea Maritima, out on the coast. Okay? I think that's where we ended chapter 23, yes? Questions? Comments? Okay. So, chapter 24, and after 5 days, the high priest Ananias came down with some elders and a spokesman, one Tertullus. They laid before the governor their case against Paul. And when he had been summoned, Tertullus began to accuse him, saying. So first of all, it took about 5 days for them to get together and get down there. And they come with a spokesman, Tertullus. Now that's a Roman name. So is this a Jew or a Roman? We don't know. And he's not mentioned anywhere other than in this event right here. So, you know, Paul had a Greek name. Saul was his Hebrew name. Paul was his Greek name. So it's not uncommon that Jews would take on another name that would be Greek or Roman for them to be able to, you know, engage the commerce, engage the society. So he could have been a Jew or he could have been a Roman citizen, which would have maybe been to their advantage because then he would have standing in front of the governor. And certainly, having a name Tertullus, he's probably fluent in Latin. So they didn't have to worry about language issues or translating. So they call Paul. Remember where Paul was staying, by the way? I find this to be a wonderful blessing to Paul. You remember where he was staying, the end of chapter 23?
Herod's Palace.
Herod's Palace, yes. What a place to be under house arrest. In the palace that Herod had built, which was gorgeous. Okay, so they call Paul, and now Tertullus begins the accusations. Since through you we enjoy much peace, and since by your foresight, most excellent Felix, reforms are being made for this nation, in every way and everywhere we accept this with all gratitude. Oh, what's he doing right there? Yeah, buttering him up, right? A little flattery will always get you somewhere. Yes, that's part of politics, isn't it? So he's flattering them a little bit. Now we know this is false flattery because the Jews hated Felix. They hated the Romans in general. Some of them hated to the point of occasionally trying to start rebellions. Remember the tribune at first thought Paul was that rebel that we tried to arrest 2 years ago, and Paul said, no, that's not me. So the Jews were known for every so often trying to rebel against the Romans. They hated Felix, so this is some false praise here. Verse 4, but to detain you no further, what's that footnote say? Detain, or weary you no further. I did not look that word up in my Greek Bible, so Either word is probably good. To detain you no further, I beg you in your kindness to hear us briefly. For we have found this man a plague, one who stirs up riots among all the Jews throughout the world and is a ringleader of the sect of the Nazarenes. He even tried to profane the temple, but we seized him. By examining him yourself, you will be able to find out from him about everything of which we accuse him. So, they call him a plague. That word I did look up. And the word there means plague or pestilence or disease. So Tertullus is calling Paul a disease on society because everywhere he goes, he does what? Stirs up riots. Now, what are a couple of things the Romans value in their government? Pay your taxes and don't rebel. So here, this is directly against one of their core values of being peaceful and not rebelling. And this Paul is a disease, a plague, and he's stirring up riots among the Jews all over the world. So you've got to deal with him, Felix. Now, he also says, and is a ringleader of the sect of the Nazarenes. That's different than we might think today, because if you today hear Nazarenes, what are you thinking? At least I am. There is a Christian denomination called the Nazarenes. That's not what this is. So what's he talking about here? It's right there in the name. He's talking about those followers of that Jesus of Nazareth. Without saying the name Jesus, he's accusing Paul of being a leader of that sect. Now the ESV translates it as sect. I looked up that word too. The actual Greek word there is heresis, which is normally translated as heresy. So he's basically, if this were alternately translated, you could say sect, that is valid, but I think a better translation would have just been leave it untranslated and say heresy. He stirs up riots among all the Jews throughout the world and is a ringleader of the heresy of the Nazarenes. That sounds a little more harsh on behalf of the Jews, because they would consider followers of Jesus to be a heresy of the Jewish religion. Right? What's a heresy? False teaching, okay. False teaching that differs from what is considered the orthodox teaching of a religion. So, what would be a heresy of Christianity today in America? Well, my two favorite punching bags. Jehovah's Witnesses and Mormons. Both of them claim they're Christian. They use all of our language. They talk about Jesus, and they even have a few of their teachings that coincide with what Orthodox Christianity teaches. However, they've got some huge false beliefs that contradict Orthodox Christianity. So we would call them heresies. Rightfully so. Christianity isn't the only one that has heresies. Muslims have heresies. Buddhists have heresies. We had one class at the seminary on like world religions where we had to learn about all sorts of stuff. Hare Krishna, have you heard of them?
No.
That's a heresy of the Buddhist religion. True Buddhists consider Hare Krishnas to be a false sect that came out of Buddhism. And there's one that I remember from the Muslim religion too. There's some heresies that have come out of Islam. That Orthodox Islam would reject as being false teachings of Islam. So pretty much every major religion has heresies that break off out of it. So that's really what he's saying here. Call him the sect of the Nazarenes, which to me almost sounds a little bit too polite. He was much harsher, calling them a heresy. Verse 6, he even tried to profane the temple, but we seized him. Now that's not going to matter to Felix. Felix is going to say, yeah, so what? I don't care about that.
We're going to tear it down.
Other than the fact that by supposedly Paul profaning the temple, which he didn't do, but Paul profaning the temple would cause a riot. Now that would be of concern to Felix. Okay? By examining him yourself, you'll be able to find out about everything of which we accuse him. Okay, the Jews also joined in the charge, affirming that all these things were so. So they're all chiming in. Yep, that's right. He's saying it right. That's what we claim. And when the governor had nodded to him to speak, that's an odd detail there, isn't it? You know, you don't sometimes get these little odd details in our events in the Bible. The governor nodded to Paul, and so he replied, "Knowing that for many years you have been a judge over this nation, I cheerfully make my defense." So first of all, Paul is not starting out with all kinds of flowery flattery like Tertullus did. He just acknowledges, "You are a judge. You're the governor. So, here's my defense." And yes, I looked that word up too, and it is apologia. So that's the word there. Apology means defense. "You can verify that it is not more than 12 days since I went up to worship in Jerusalem. And they did not find me disputing with anyone or stirring up a crowd, either in the temple or in the synagogues or in the city." So first of all, Paul passed through there on his way to Jerusalem 12 days prior. That can be verified. You can find witnesses. There's proof of that. And in that 12 days, which actually minus 5 days would be 7, minus the day that was there, so 6 days, whatever, there was no disputes. Everything was fine. I wasn't creating a ruckus in the temple or in the synagogues or in the city. That's Paul's defense here. It's actually a pretty good defense. And it's verifiable. Felix could talk to some witnesses and find out. So you can verify this. Verse 13. "Neither can they prove to you what they now bring up against me." How can they prove that Paul is stirring up riots all around the world? Well, that would take quite some doing. You'd have to send for witnesses, and you'd have to... Well, over there in Corinth, was Paul really stirring up a riot? Some might say yes, or some might say no, but that would take forever to try and get some verification of this all around the world. Okay? "And they can't prove to you even now that I was profaning the temple." You know, that's kind of implied in here too. They can't prove any of their accusations. I can prove my defense. Just go ask some witnesses. "But this I confess to you, that according to the way, which they call a sect," again, same word there, heresy, and notice how he refers to Christianity, the way, that's still kind of the original name for Christianity, the way. And I looked up the way, and actually the word there, it's way, or road, or path. The same word means all of that. So they can say, you could alternately translate that. I don't know why it got translated as the way, but it could be as the road or the path. The path to what? Or the road to what? Or the way to what? The way to heaven. The way to salvation. It's through Jesus. What an interesting name for our first name for us as Christians. Anyway, "according to the way, which they call a heresy, I worship the God of our fathers, believing everything laid down by the law and written in the prophets, having a hope in God, which these men themselves accept, that there will be a resurrection of both the just and the unjust." Ooh, there he's bringing up resurrection again. So are this Jewish delegation, are they Pharisees or Sadducees? Probably some of each. And the high priest would be a member of the Sadducees. So, right, but he's telling the truth here, because what's he talking about? We have hope for eternity because of what? Resurrection. That's what gives us hope. By the way, just a side note, and I remember talking to somebody sometime, it was a Jehovah's Witness. You've heard me talk about when the one came to my door before I was a pastor. So I started talking to him, and we would have discussions and debates. He said, "Can I come back next week?" I said, "Sure." So I'd go ask my pastor a bunch of questions. He would go ask his elders a bunch of questions. And then we'd have another discussion slash debate. This went on for 3 or 4 weeks. And then he said, "Can I bring my elder with me?" And I said, "Sure." That happened once. And that was kind of the last time we met, because the elder was a bit belligerent. But I remember asking him to say, "So you believe only 144,000 are going to be saved?" That's one of their beliefs, because that number is in Revelation. He said, "Well, that's how many will be in heaven." I said, "Well, then what's going to happen to you and the rest of people like you?" "Well, we will be preserved in paradise on earth rather than in heaven." I said, "Okay, that's not in the Bible. So what about unbelievers?" "Well, poof, they're just gone. They disintegrate. they don't exist anymore. And I say, so you, again, that's not in the Bible, but you think that's the action of a loving God to just disintegrate somebody? And he said, well, yeah, then you don't have to worry about your existence after that. And I said, that's kind of sad. That's a sad, a belief about a judgmental God, which I've, atheists, if you talk to an atheist, what happens when you die? Oh, I just don't exist anymore. I'm gone. Well, what a sad state of events, because that means your entire existence is dependent upon you finding happiness and pleasure right now. Your entire focus is on right now. Because when you die, there's nothing left. That's what an atheist would believe, or in some cases, Jehovah's Witness. So he's talking about resurrection, which gives us hope. Does resurrection give us hope? Absolutely. And he says, resurrection of both the just and the unjust. Oh, that sounds a little bit like what? The creed or the catechism? That God will resurrect all people? Verse 16. So I always take pains to have a clear conscience toward both God and man. So I can tell you, Felix, that I have never said anything that has caused a ruckus or a riot. I have not caused anything against God or man that is false, that is misleading, or that is lying. I have a clear conscience. He would tell the truth, and sometimes that would get people upset, but he's just telling the truth plainly. So he has a clear conscience. What a good state for Paul to be in, to have a clear conscience. Verse 17, now after several years, I came to bring alms to my nation, and to present offerings. While I was doing this, they found me purified in the temple without any crowd or tumult. So again, you can verify this. It's only a day's ride away. Go talk to people. I was in the temple for quite some time. I was purified. I was allowed to be in there. I'm a Jew, and I was bringing offerings, and everything was fine. Everything's fine. What's wrong? Nothing. Everything's fine. All right, but some Jews from Asia, they ought to be here before you to make an accusation. Oh, is that part of our legal system today? You have a right to address or confront or hear your accuser directly. Mm-hmm. Isn't that somewhere in our legal system?
Yes.
Well, maybe it started from right here. Paul says, where are my accusers? Why aren't they here to talk about this? I'm being accused like through these delegates. They ought to be here before you to make an accusation, should they have anything against me. Or else let these men themselves say what wrongdoing they found when I stood before the council, other than this one thing, that I cried out while standing among them, it is with respect to the resurrection of the dead that I am on trial before you this day. So again, Paul is entirely truthful. And he says, the only problem I caused is by claiming this, that I'm here because of the resurrection, and that caused a ruckus in the council. That wasn't even in the temple. So Paul admits that, apparently with no remorse, which he shouldn't have. All he did was tell the truth. Okay? All right. Comments or questions so far? These couple of chapters, the last chapter, this chapter, and it's going to go on a little bit. There's quite a bit of drama, isn't there? You know, if you took this as a script for a soap opera, you'd probably be in good stead. You could write a good soap opera from this. Yeah. Not a Hallmark movie, though. Those have to follow a certain formula, you know. You know those are on already. They've been on since July? Do you watch those, Greg? No. I don't either. Jill will turn on a Hallmark movie and I say, really? I said, have you seen this one? Well, no, this is one I haven't seen. Or sometimes, yeah, I've already seen this one. Then why are you watching it again? Because I like them. I'll go in the other room and start playing on my phone. I don't want to be there. Pastor Q likes Hallmark movies. I knew there was something weird about him. All right. So, yes, this is quite a drama. So this is why, this is the only thing I did that caused a challenge or a difficulty, was I cried this out while standing among them. Okay, verse 22. But Felix, having a rather accurate knowledge of the way, put them off, saying, when Lysias the tribune comes down, I will decide your case. Then he gave orders to the centurion that he, Paul, should be kept in custody, but have some liberty, and that none of his friends should be prevented from attending to his needs. So where is he going? It appears back to Herod's palace. Under house arrest, of all places. And he has some liberty where people can come and bring him stuff, or news, or goods, or food that he might want, or
probably,
whatever.
Probably some people like to go there and stay.
Yeah, they want to visit Paul a lot, because then they get to hang out in the palace a little bit. Not too bad. And what does Felix do? Now, Felix is the governor. He's not the tribune. The tribune reports to him. Military reports to the politicians, just like today in America. So what does Felix do? He defers. He stalls. Okay, put everything on hold. I gotta talk to Lysias. He's the one, he's the tribune who sent you here. So we're gonna wait till I can talk to Lysias. Yeah, yeah. I'm just thinking, what a politician. Alright. Now, why does Felix have an accurate knowledge of the way? Well, right here. After some days, Felix came with his wife Drusilla, who was Jewish, and he sent for Paul and heard him speak about faith in Christ Jesus. So, Felix's wife was Jewish. That's why he has some knowledge of the way. So she knows something about it and probably at least gave him a smidgen of background information about the way. A Roman marrying a Jew. Well, that's Paul's own parents, isn't it? Can we cross cultures like that? Yes, of course we can. You know, maybe you've heard a little side note I heard from somewhere else. You know, all this racism business that especially cropped up at COVID time and all that. It's all a bunch of nonsense from a Christian standpoint. Because there's only one race. The human race. This idea that, you know, you can't, interracial squabbles. It reminds me of the Dr. Seuss book on the star-bellied Sneetches, right? He knows.
I love that story.
You love that story, yeah.
I do.
Okay, so yes, Felix has a Jewish wife, so he knows a little bit about the way, and he sends for Paul to hear him some more. What is this saying? Wow! Paul is getting a private audience with the governor to explain to him more about Christianity and Jesus. What an incredible opportunity! And as he reasoned about righteousness and self-control and the coming judgment, Felix was alarmed and said, "Go away for the present. When I get an opportunity, I will summon you." Why did Felix get alarmed?
Probably because of the life he was living.
Yep. What do we call that as Lutherans? What troubled him? What was Paul mentioning or talking about that troubled him? You see it right there. The coming judgment. What do we call that? Law? So Paul must have been talking to him about the judgment of God upon sin. And Felix is like, oh, I'm one of those. Oh, am I going to be part of this judgment? So the law is causing some consternation inside of Felix's brain. And so it's sinking in. He's listening. He's absorbing stuff. This is all good stuff. So he says, you know what? He's bothered by it. Go away. We'll talk some more later. He's got to process. He's got to think. He's probably got duties to take care of as well, you know, as governor. Verse 26, at the same time, he hoped that money would be given to him by Paul. Oh, there's a little, what's he hoping for?
A bribe.
He's leaving himself open for Paul to sneak some money into the temple from his friends, and then to come and bribe Felix, and Felix was probably amenable to that. yeah, you pay me enough money, and I'll leave the guard off duty for this night, and you can sneak out the back way and just disappear.
Which shows he's been bribed before.
Which shows he's been bribed before. So Paul, speaking about the coming judgment and self-control and coming judgment, Felix apparently lacks some self-control. And so Paul, talking about judgment, that's tickling the conscience of Felix. So he's still wanting a bribe, but now he's starting to have doubts. Is this a good thing or not? I might be judged by whatever God Paul is preaching about. All right.
It's almost like Pontius Pilate and Barabbas.
Yeah, sure.
I knew there was something wrong with this guy, so here's a really bad guy, so you're going to choose the good guy, right?
Right. Yeah. And it backfired on him.
Yeah.
All right. At the same time, he hoped that money would be given to him by Paul, so he sent for him often and conversed with him. So he's leaving the door open to a bribe, but he still wants to hear what Paul has to say. Weird, huh? Well, politicians. Verse 27. When 2 years had elapsed, when 2 years had elapsed, Felix was succeeded by Porcius Festus, and desiring to do the Jews a favor, Felix left Paul in prison. Okay.
Is this the prison of the palace?
I assume it is. It doesn't say otherwise, but it might have changed. We don't know. Felix retires. There was such a thing. You could retire, and you would be given a pension by the Roman government if you were an official. So they would get a pension. So Felix is succeeded by Porcius Festus. I think that's a name known in Roman, records. But in the meantime, Felix retained control of Paul, kept Paul under custody as a favor to the Jews. Okay? All right. Questions or comments? Oh, something I forgot to bring up. Yeah. Oh, I'll have to remember to do this in order. I'm going backwards now a little bit. Look at verse 6. They're accusing Paul. He even tried to profane the temple, but we seized him. By examining him yourself, you will be able to find out from him about everything of which we accuse him. Notice the verse numbers.
Oh, 6, 8.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, what's going on there?
Not more than
6'7". Yeah, right. Isn't that silly? Anyway. Is that banned now in the school, supposedly?
I don't know.
Yeah. What happened to verse 7? Well, this happens a few places in the Bible. As Lutherans, we don't subscribe to higher criticism of the Bible, where we try to read into the Bible what we think the author meant to say. That's higher criticism, that's liberal theology, we don't buy into that. But we do practice what's called textual criticism. So I'm getting a little technical here, sorry about that. Lutherans do practice textual criticism, which means our scholars will take all of the manuscripts that are available from the early church, and by the way, there are hundreds, that are preserved in various libraries, very delicate, and they will take all of those and try to determine what is the oldest and what is the original. So, if you look at the footnote here at the end of verse 6, it says, some manuscripts add, and we would have judged him according to our law, but the chief captain Lysias, yes, so that's the tribune, came and with great violence took him out of our hands, commanding his accusers to come before you. So, the scholars have determined, and there's some Lutheran scholars, some from other denominations too, that the manuscript that this verse 7 came from dated later than the other manuscript. So they say the other manuscript must be the original, or closer to the original, and this one is added. I happen to agree with that decision by the scholars. Now, first of all, the handful of places in the Bible where there's a questionable verse, and you'll see this, for instance, at the end of Mark, you'll see it. There's another place in the Gospels. There's a couple of places where it happens. The verse that's in question has no impact on theology, right? If verse 7 is in there or if verse 7 is not in there, does it mean anything to the events of this story? No. Has no impact. However, the fact that here in verse 7 it says the chief captain, what has Luke been calling, Luke's the author, what has Luke been calling Lysias up until now?
Tribune.
Why would he all of a sudden say chief captain? So right there is another piece, a second piece of evidence to say probably verse 7 was added by a later scribe or monk, was added to the text, because it only appears in later manuscripts. So our scholars have said, we don't think this is part of the original. Plus, it has no material bearing on the events of the story. So we're leaving it out. But just in good faith, because it is in some manuscripts of the early church, we're going to put it as a footnote. That's why some of you have Lutheran study Bibles. Is it a footnote in there? Yeah. So that's where that comes from. Okay. So I think at one point in one of my classes, we looked up the, I don't know, four or five or six spots in the Bible where there's a verse in question. And in all cases, if you put the verse in or if you take the verse out, it doesn't change the events that are being talked about in the letter or in the gospel or whatever. It changes no meaning of anything. So that's the good news. It doesn't really matter. Okay. But this does say that maybe some later monk or scribe who was copying this thought to put in an explanation that the Jews wanted to do more to Paul, but the chief captain Lysias rescued Paul out of the hands of the Jews who were about to, maybe in an impulse, stone him or execute him. Okay? So think of it as just by a way of an explanation from some later scribe. Okay, back to where we were. So that was up there at verse 6 to 7. You got me thinking that now. Oh, goodness. That's the stupidest thing ever. All right. Questions? Comments? Look at that. 40 minutes. I've never finished so early. We got to have some discussion.
Or go to the watermark.
Oh. Linda?
You spoke about the Jehovah Witnesses.
Yeah.
And you said that he said that the 144,000, they will just disappear.
The 144,000 are the ones who will be saved and go to heaven with God, with Jesus. Everyone who will be saved outside of that number, according to this Jehovah's Witness, and I don't know that he was teaching the Jehovah's Witness doctrine correctly, but this is what he thought. Outside of that 144,000 would be placed in a new paradise on earth, a new Garden of Eden.
But, yeah, I've heard the same thing.
Yeah.
But then how, what if your loved one is one of the 144,000,
yeah,
they want to spend time with you, do you just get a bus pass?
Yeah, I don't know. You wave across the skies?
Elevator?
Elevator. Yeah.
Yeah.
Elevator,
yeah.
Right?
Heavenly elevator.
I'm in Jacob's ladder.
Yeah. I did ask him, well, how do you know if you're one of those 144,000? He said, oh, you'll know. If you're one of those, you'll know. And I said, well, didn't that number get filled up like 100 years ago? He said, well, we don't know when it was filled up.
Yeah.
I'm like, what a mushy, mealy answer, you know?
But your odds are tiny. So.
Yeah. The odds are ever not in your favor. All right, good question. Other questions? Yeah, Pat.
Here where it talks about at the end, the ones that are in heaven will come back and so will the ones from hell. Well,
be resurrected.
Right, be resurrected. Of course, the ones that come from heaven are saved. What happens to the ones that come from hell? Does God send them back to hell?
Well, I don't know that he ever takes them out of hell. See, this is one of those, good question, by the way, this is one of those unknowns. When you die, your body and soul are separated. Your body is buried in the ground, or cremated, or whatever. Your soul is with God, with Jesus in heaven. part of it, we know that because in Revelation we have a view of all of the souls in heaven crying out to God. How much longer? How much longer till judgment day? They're crying out. So we know your souls in heaven and your bodies in the earth. So on judgment day, your body is resurrected, and again, I'm speculating a little bit because there's a lot of vagueness around judgment day. So we would surmise that your body is resurrected and then brought into heaven to be reunited with your soul, so you become a whole person again.
But you got new bodies.
Well, your body is when your body is resurrected, it's perfected. Yeah, it's made perfect, right? So you won't recognize me because I'll be so handsome.
Your mouth will give it away.
So let me finish this thought, and then I got another thought on that. So those who are unjust, those who are non-believers, their bodies would be resurrected and then reattached to their souls in hell. So they don't actually come out of hell. It's just their body is resurrected and reassembled with their soul. Okay? Does that help a little bit?
Yeah.
So you don't actually, when you're in heaven, your soul doesn't leave heaven. It's perfect. Peace and bliss and joy. Greg knows. He's been there. Celeste has been there, right?
I don't know if I was there.
Well,
my own personal.
You thing. Had your own little vision of it.
Yeah, vision of it.
So I think you don't come back from heaven and you don't come back from hell. You stay there, but your body joins you.
You don't really want to come back.
No, you don't want to come back. Now, about the, what did you say about mouth?
Would be a giveaway.
Oh, my mouth would be a giveaway because you won't recognize me. I will tell you just a little side note, kind of funny. When I was back, well, not funny for this reason, back from my dad's funeral, there was a lot of seniors. I was going to say old timers, who knew me from when I was this high or when I was a young man before departing. And I had at least three people who said, "Oh, Marty Measle, I didn't recognize you, but I recognized your voice." And three people say that to me. They recognized my voice, even though they didn't recognize me, because I didn't have a beard then, I actually had hair, I was thinner, you know, I was all this stuff. They're like, "Oh, you look different, but I recognize your voice." And I'm like, well, I guess there's some part of me that's recognizable. So yes, you'll recognize me by my voice, Linda, when you get to heaven. Where is that Pastor Measle? I gotta go talk to him.
We'll know that laugh.
Yeah. Alright, other questions? We still got, 12 minutes or whatever we got. You want a little ask a pastor time, or you want to just finish a little bit early?
Let's finish a little bit early.
All right. Bill votes for finishing a bit early.
That's the silence.
There we go. The silence. That's what it means. All right. Well, let's rise and close with the Lord's Prayer. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, and the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen.
Thanks for coming. Have a good night.